be.
Yeah, there it is. When that robot voice pops in, you know it's time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, oh, we are so glad you've chosen to tune in to
ELB.
Especially if you're one of our geeks and sneaks using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. We're going to be with you in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. They bring the show to you. They make it possible. They support the show. And through their generosity, we get to continue. In exchange, we give them some cool extras, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and bonus content, including an entire first season of Feeling This with Alex Solman and Christian Spicer talking about the feelings behind video games. Season 2 coming soon. We got bonus chats with all kinds of spoilers in them early for patrons. We got the Wednesday show we call Paid DLC with Lana Bashinsky joining Christian Spicer and myself. It's wacky, it's wild, it's unscripted. We don't know where it's going every single week, but it's darn fun, and it's exclusive to Cool Ranch level patrons. And we also have the audio version of a brand new book club we just started called DLC Book Club, where Lana Bashinsky and myself are talking about the Malazan Books of the Fallen, a fantasy series I've been wanting to read for a long time. That just started this week. So much great content, all for patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. You can be one of them. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff Cannata, the spell with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host, slash nemesis, the guy whose Easter eggs are always filled with chocolate, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Hello, everyone. I'm a jelly bean kind of guy.
What? Chocolate.
We've talked about the bad chocolate here in the States. Like, if you get me some, like, good, you know, yeah, but, like, some Starburst jelly beans, there are Nerd jelly beans I just learned about this year that are, like, jelly beans with Sweet Tart jelly beans. Basically anything with Jelly Belly jelly beans.
Our Easter Bunny here locally in Denver, this the one in my house, the Easter Bunny that comes to my house, put some Reese's Peanut Butter Cups in a Easter egg. Guess what? The squirrels get to them real quick. The squirrels will get to your Easter. They don't get a plastic egg does not stop a squirrel. Let me tell you.
No. Easter squirrels don't play.
Yeah. There was a lot of partially eaten plastic eggs and wrappers of Reese's peanut butter cups in our yard this morning. Anywho, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about video games. And we got such a great show for you, ladies and gentlemen. We got some really interesting news to discuss, some cool games to get to, and we have an awesome guest to do that with. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, I'm excited because DLC stands for Disabled Accessibility's Leading Charity, because we have the senior director of Able Gamers, speaker, storyteller, advocate, and creator, Steven Spawn is back with us. Hey, Steven, how are you?
Hey, how's it going? It's been a while.
It has. I think we had an entire pandemic in between the last time you were on.
Yeah, it seems like it's certainly been a decade or two. Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You were on in the before times, and
it was so long ago that I was listening to the intro in the green room, and I'm like, I cannot match the energy that Jeff just put out. Holy crap! That was like a sweat into the oldies Richard Simmons level of introduction. I'm like, I can't live up to that. I'm in trouble.
Well, you are bringing the prestige, because also in the interim, I think since the last time you were on, you've won at least one, maybe multiple awards. Very impressive.
Wonderful a couple of words here and there, but you know what? At the end of the day, they all hold the paper the same way, you know?
Well, we're glad to see it. We're happy for you and love what you do and what Able Gamers does. And in fact, I know that one of the reasons that you wanted to be on this week and that we love having you is Able Gamers has a big event coming up, right?
Exactly. Yeah, we're doing our very first virtual gala. It's a baby project of mine that I've just been so excited to release into the world. I've been working with an amazing event coordinator named Maggie Judge, who has just been phenomenal in putting together a very first of its kind for the charity world event, where imagine Stardew Valley meets Zoom, and you get to make a cool little character, bring it to a digital convention where you get to learn all about what Able Gamers does, meet the people who we've been helping, and your favorite creators. So we've got people like Little Simsy and Moistgrim from Markiplier's world, and Ethan, and all of the people that you love in your top tier Twitch are going to be there, and you can buy a ticket and come and hang out and get to talk to them for a couple hours, and then with the headliner from Brian Weck from NSP. So I'm super excited. It's going to be awesome.
That's phenomenal. So when is that happening and how do people get tickets?
April 22nd, 4 p.m. Eastern. Until we drop, you can go to ablegamers.org/gala and check out all the cool things. If you're into really cool swag, you can also purchase a ticket with an at-home box. It's this really cool box we're proud of that has all kinds of swag that you might pick up at the convention. But you know what? The thing is, conventions are expensive, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, you know, and our tickets are $25. So come on out and wow, be virtually there and hang out with some of your favorite celebs.
That's fantastic. And a great cause, of course. And I just love this notion of kind of mixing an event, a hangout, a virtual meet and greet with a video game.
Yeah.
You know, you're kind of doing both things at the same time. It's really, really cool.
Trying to do something new and something innovative, and we'll see how the community likes it in a couple of weeks.
Very excited. Very excited. That's really, really cool, man. And congratulations on your continued success. Let's start talking
Jeff,
about
the- Jeff, we got to do one thing. This is just for people on video and mostly just for me. Will you hold your shirt up? I know what it says, but with me? Your mic blocking it, it looks like it says something very different. There it is.
Rock, paper, scissors. It says rock, paper, scissors.
Yes, it's an FCS shirt and rock, paper, scissors, but with the mic and you see part of it, it looks very, this is a clean show, that. Jeff. This is, yeah.
Rock, paper, scissors.
Rock, yeah.
Did it look like it said rock, laser, scissors? Is that the problem, Christian?
Yes, that was, yes, it said, yes. Rock, super, scissors is what I kept saying. So,
I thought you were selling socks. I thought you really like socks.
All right, well, I guess this shirt leaves the rotation for being on the, all right.
Or stays in, whichever way you want to go.
Do you want to start merchandising socks? Do it now.
There you go. I missed my calling as a sock man. All right, let's jump in and start the show the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. We love hearing from you. That's, you can send anything, stories, comments, questions. That's our email address, and we love getting to know you, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Another way to reach out and be part of the community is to hang out in one of our online communities, including our subreddit, which is 5x5dlc.reddit.com, or the Discord, which is also 5x5dlc on Discord. Great folks hanging out, talking games, and all sorts of other stuff. We urge you to take part. But Stephen, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
I don't know that there was much else that I could think of to talk about, whether or not there will be a PS5 Pro or not. I mean, you know, with PlayStation, they always seem like they're up to no good. They're up to putting out the stuff that we don't expect, you know, just putting out recently the accessibility controller that I had to keep in secret for nearly 3 years. So we know that they plot things out for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. That was a cool announcement. This one percolating, we don't know. We don't have any official confirmation, but There has been
Stephen, or do we?
Yeah, maybe you know something.
Well, for just 75,000 subs, you can just go ahead and confirm or not.
lot of rumors circulating around of a PS5 Pro. Obviously, PS4 had a Pro version that came out, what, a couple years, was it, after the first PS4? There have been sources confirming that PS5 Pro is in development and could release late 2024, so over a year away. Still, that seems rather soon for a console generation that still kind of is just getting its feet under it, still trying to get its wheels moving, because, my goodness, how many games do we have that are exclusive to the PS5? Not very many. There's been a lot of cross-gen stuff up to this point. So having – and you know, PS5, obviously, with COVID and all the supply chain issues, has been a hard console to get your hands on if you want one. I think that has changed of late, but it does feel a bit soon, perhaps, or it feels a little bit like whiplash when people are kind of just settling into the PS5 era to have an update to that hardware. How do you feel about it, Stephen? Do you think it's too soon?
I mean, you know, the great thing now is with backwards compatibility being such a thing in the universe now, I mean, you know, a slightly different story but comparable, where, you know, Xbox turning up their emulation. You know, you're always got these things where the consoles are constantly changing and evolving and adapting. And I think the whiplash from buying a new system to having to upgrade to a new one is not good, because people don't want to pay $400 again. So as long as you have a decent reason to do it, I think people will go along with it. But I think the one thing I always tell both sides about when we're talking about accessibility or just video gaming in general is, like, remember when it came to the last generation of Xbox and PlayStation, you know, in the beginning, Xbox was handily winning, and then eventually PlayStation came back. So could that happen again? I don't know. Right now, Xbox with Game Pass has it hands down, but PlayStation's got tricks up their sleeves. Maybe this is the ace in the hole.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, according to these rumors, the big thing that the PS5 Pro would push is to, quote, accelerate ray tracing performance. Christian, let me ask you, you think that's worthwhile? I mean, you and I both have what we like to call beefy GPs on our PCs, and we like all the bells and whistles turned on. We like our ray tracing. I don't think we've seen the PS5 pushed to its limits or pushed to its capabilities, even, let alone limits. Do you think this is a worthwhile goal to push that line out even farther with a hardware iteration?
Yeah, I think another perhaps angle or part of the prism to what Steven said is, how is Sony looking at this in terms of a cost, profit, market share play? And I think, as Steven mentioned, you know, mid-generation console status can change rather abruptly. And I think if Sony has found a way to manufacture the PS5 cheaper, which it seems like they have, still rumored, but the detachable disk drive replacing the current version, and it's a, you know, cheaper to produce SKU, and if they found a way to make the console internally cheaper, and now they can push out a better performing, you know, bullet on the back of the box kind of thing of, like, look what this can do, only our console can do this kind of thing. I think that's a nice marketing push for that PS5 Pro that I imagine would just kind of be targeted to the technologists, you know, the folks that got to have the best, right? I don't want to say the hardcore gamer, because I don't even think it's that. I think it's a subset of that, like the newest, latest, best, right? Like, need to have it, folks. But it also is a heck of a, this is the Corvette Z06 in the showroom, and then come in and you can buy this Cavalier while you're here. And the PS5 certainly is no Cavalier, but I think having that showpiece console that all the trailers are rendered on, you know, shown on PS5 Pro, I think it could be very desirable for Sony, and also to tout the, we have the best console, blah, 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 blah. Like, right now, Microsoft has the Series X, and all the trailers that Microsoft releases shows Series X footage, but they also sell the Series S that in a lot of territories is their best seller.
Well, it's a lot cheaper too.
It is. That's the other side of this.
I don't think that's what that would be. If it goes PS4 to PS4 Pro
kind of template.
If they're using the template of 4 to 4 Pro, right, it's not going cheaper, right? It's not making it cheaper for the end user. It's actually, this is the new high end, right? Which I think the Pro name would be indicating. It's not, hey, this is a way to cut the price.
I think they haven't shown is a reason why. Because like you said, they haven't shown the PS5 flexing all of its muscles yet. So,
I can imagine definitely a situation. We already have a lot of these games, these current gen games, with the ray tracing specifically, having settings where it's like, do you want frame rate or do you want performance? And then maybe there'll be a third setting of like, you have a PS5 Pro. You know, you can do both. You don't have to compromise. Let them eat cake.
Yeah.
But Steven, do you think a pro version needs to also have a different form factor? I know when the PS5 came out, everybody was like, it's so big. Do you think that a pro would need to sort of be a little more streamlined as well?
They definitely came in at one of the heavyweight consoles that seems to be a complaint I hear about in the console quote unquote wars. I'm a big fan of not being a fan of one side or the other, but rather pay attention to the content. I think that my thought towards PlayStation would be, if you can do it cheaper, bring the price point down, make it a better SKU in general for the public, that's a good thing, because then greater access for more people that may not be able to swing the extra couple $100 for something that you want them to adopt. But I think at the end of the day, you still got a giant problem on your hands with Game Pass. So I think they got to come up with something that's maybe, if this is going to be their silver bullet, it better come out of the gun and be like, you know, half the price.
Yeah. Wow. That would be impressive. I think it's pretty clear that we won't hear any official statement from Sony on this for a while. You know, there's no reason for them to undercut sales of PS5 by saying, hey, there's another one coming. If it really is a 2024 end of 2024 product, I don't think we'll hear about it until 2024. So
I'm curious if the chip shortage is truly over, because that's what I cannot get a beat on from both what I do for a day job and also from just the consumer perspective. It's like some companies are talking about, oh, the chip shortage is over, so now here's all of our products. Other ones are still saying, hey, we still can't get the Silicon Valley stuff that we want, so product demand is still a problem. So I would be interested to hear from them as well, some kind of reassurance. Like, don't worry, Christmas 2024, there's not going to be six of these things that you have to fight over.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. That's a great point. And it's just, there's so many question marks about it. So the whole world is still, like you said, we're not back to pre-pandemic globally with supply chain. So it'll be interesting to see if there is a PlayStation 5 Pro. And then also, does that mean that we'll see an update to the Xbox Series X? Very interesting.
That's what makes it Pro, though, is just, do you have it? You know, it's like, it's the same actual thing as the 5. It just has a new box on it. And they really do, like Steven said, they release 7 of them or 6 of them. And it's like, hey. Yeah.
Collector's editions. There you go.
Got one, buddy?
They're also so different, like, just from a social media perspective. Like, you know, Stein, who runs a lot of the social media over at Xbox, like, If this had been an Xbox thing and it had been leaked, you'd have seen the monkey looking at the camera sideways when it came out, because Xbox immediately jumps on something like this, whereas PlayStation, they'll stay silent. So, you know, it's a different kind of marketing, a different kind. So we may not hear anything about this for a long time.
What is your perspective on the PlayStation accessibility controller? You mentioned it at the top. Are you happy with the product that they put out? I know that the Xbox One has been lauded as being very, very successful.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I got to consult on both of those and got to be on the teams that were giving feedback for both versions on the different consoles now, both in secrecy. It took PlayStation a long time to come out of the gate. And I think, you know, they're both controllers that are for specific situations. So, you know, the Xbox adaptive controller, I went on a huge press tour for that, where me and my buddy Craig from Able Gamers probably spoke to like 105 outlets, and you know, everything from MSN to Pop Sugar to DLC, where we got to talking, you know, about, you know, these great things that were coming out. And PlayStation didn't quite do the media blitz that Xbox did, and instead are letting the product speak for itself. And it's for a different market. It's specifically for people who need an adaptable controller that they can put next to themselves, where the buttons are very easy to hit, but also you need to have the strength to be able to levitate your hand above the buttons, but it's also very modular. So it's going to serve a certain population, just like the XAC does for Xbox. And I know that's not what people want to hear. They want to hear, is it accessible, yes or no? But unfortunately, the answer is, just like any medical product you've ever had, is it has a purpose, and it serves a certain population. And so you just hope that, you know, all the products come out that can service the entire population in combination, and this just goes to service another segment of that same pop.
Interesting. I love hearing your perspective on that.
I know that was a long-winded yes or no.
No, it's no, it's useful information. I find it fascinating. The thing that was so, you know, as somebody that doesn't have a lot of knowledge about that, you know, the needs of that population, I was just struck by how different those two controllers were from each other, you know, and it's surprising to me that the two very different approaches, and I find it very interesting. So
Xbox wanted to be more of a hub where you plug in other things and other switches, and, you know, and PlayStation wanted to make an actual controller that you use their controller. So it actually kind of sings to what they do, because, you know, think about the DualShock and whatnot, right? So they very much like to have their, here's a special thing, we think you're going to love it. And then people are either like, yes, I do, take my money. Or else they're like, go away, I hate it. So, you know, that's what they do as a company. So I think it'll pay off for the people that will help.
Great. Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
Well, I'm going to pull a Jeff Cannata here and do a little one. That's definitely my story of the week. And then I'm going to sandwich. I'm going to Oreo, as Wednesday listeners might know. I'm going to Oreo two others together. But my first story of the week is, as she tweeted it, Lana Bashinsky has been promoted to associate art director on her R&D project at Riot Games.
Yay!
Which is awesome. She's the best. And
she's the best.
Congrats to her for that. So that's,
I'm
like,
sure she would be mortified that you made your story of the week, but
no way.
We love her and we want to celebrate her. Yes.
Yes. That's not, why would she be?
I don't know. I just feel
it's public. It's
okay,
public.
No,
it's my,
it's
story
great.
Of the week.
You're right. It's wonderful.
I am proud of people that I know that are more successful than me, which is like why having Steven on the show, we bring the hype and Steven brings the credibility, Jeff.
No,
so
the
Lana,
good news is I feel the same way. I love people that are more successful to us. And that's what's so wonderful is that almost everyone is. And that's, it's just a world that we just get to feel great all the
now
time.
Now you two, I wouldn't be here if it weren't for the fact that you're both amazing people. So.
Oh, thank
oh,
you,
see,
Steven.
Stop.
See,
okay.
He's too
my
nice.
Story of the week is Steven said we are both amazing. So I'm going to make it a little Oreo here as DLC's, I think, resident handheld gamer, I would say.
Okay, fair.
I'm going to package two here. The first, as we're coming out of the PlayStation 5 Pro rumor, is this rumor of Sony's next PlayStation handheld, which I'll get into the details on in a little bit. And then also alongside that is this idea that the Asus, I always say it wrong.
You know, they hired they paid a sponsorship for a show I was on many years ago, and when we did that sponsorship,
Asus?
they told us that it was pronounced Asus.
Asus,
which was complete shock to me as somebody had said Asus my whole life.
Yeah, Asus.
But they hired us to say some stuff and they told us we had to say Asus. So I don't know.
That's money well spent, cuz it's paying. It's
actually founded by the Cat in the Hat author.
yeah. Yeah, no, Dr. Seuss.
Not Dr. Seuss, just one of his one of his friends.
Just
one
a of his family Seuss, members. Any old yeah. Seuss, a not Seuss. Dr. Yeah. Seuss.
Lesser known, less credited A. Seuss from the cat in A. Hat.
Someday hopes to be the Seuss, but you know, probably never will.
Mom, Dad, how many computers do I need to invent before you love me? Are you a doctor, son? Not yet. Then now you know. Now I might remember it, though, Stephen.
There you go.
So they announced, not as an April Fool's joke, but also as April Fool's, but then like, no, it's real. They're releasing the ROG Ally, which is their handheld device, which is a Windows play-in, better than Steam Deck, spec-in, haven't released the price point yet. Steam Deck competitor, which I find fascinating as someone who loves their Steam Deck. And so now going
back. It runs
back,
Windows. What could go wrong?
Going back to Sony's to give those details. And I've set the stage of these two, one rumored, one actual, new handhelds entering this handheld renaissance we're living in with the Steam Deck and the Switch still selling gangbusters and the Playdate and the Analog Pocket and all of these things. The rumors on Sony's next PlayStation handheld is that it is a remote play device, for all intents and purposes tethered to your PlayStation 5 and meant to be a not second screen in terms of what everybody thought you were doing before, like on an iPad, right? Control the drone as your friend plays, but you know, you have to have a PS5 in-house or on a fast network, and then you're tapping into that to stream those games to you. And what I'm curious about here, gentlemen, is for the Sony device, is there a market for that when you can kind of remote play on just about anything? And two, couldn't you do that on the ROG Ally?
Steven, are handheld devices, is there any accessibility movement in kind of usability on the handheld device? I mean, does Valve have any resources for folks that need accessibility options for the Steam Deck, for example?
It's still very Wild West when it comes to handheld devices, because the, you know, things like the Switch used to be one of the things that I got into fights on the internet all the time, because you'd have a disabled person go on to a show and talk about how Switch is amazingly accessible, and then I'd get a dozen and a half emails from people saying, hey, I heard this is really accessible. And I have to be like, well, currently there are not a lot of adapters that can work for it. And currently it's not really that accessible for someone who has your disability. And then I'd have a lot of explaining to do. So it kind of became a nightmare for me that made me snappy at some points. And, and the problem is it's so dependent on disability. So to that person, the Switch was amazing. It was a godsend because they could use it, right? And yeah. If you can't use it, then it's a nightmare. So it's just like controllers, to each their own. And the only thing that's strange to me is that, except with the exception of the Playdate, like the Steam Deck, now the Ally, quote unquote, and maybe even the next Sony Vita, Vita 3 or whatever they're going to call it. they all kind of look the same. They all really kind of act the same as far as holding them. They're very Switch-esque. And So, if they're just copying the same format, there's not going to be a real big advantage for anyone. The only thing I could say from the accessibility standpoint is there are, a billion mice in the world, and there is exactly one model that works for my particular disability that I stick with. So, to me, that's kind of what we're talking here is if it works for your disability, that'd be great. And you're just going to have to borrow them from a friend or rent one from a store to see if it works for you.
Yeah.
I do like think the hubs too, like how, and just in terms of the Steam, this is me being, I guess, pro Steam Deck and hopefully the Ally. And there's been some early hands-on with it as well, where, let this device be more than what it is in terms of like, put it on the big screen if you want to, dock it to something if you want to, use a controller if you want to. And that's where I feel like, again, totally rumored, this PlayStation handheld perhaps seems limited to me. But again, Stephen, as you said, for the DualSense or any of their controllers, it's like, we made this thing, It's $80. It does some cool stuff. Hopefully you like it. If not, we kind of don't care because this is what we're making.
They kind of don't. They're just like, if you don't like it, well, buy something else. This is what we made. So, yeah. I mean, how do you even argue with a philosophy like that? You don't. It's like, oh, all right. Well, okay.
Moving product, on.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
No,
I do think you make a great point, Stephen, about they're all sort of the same form factor or just, you know, very slight variations on the same form factor. Yeah. And it would be interesting to see somebody – I mean, I guess it's kind of like phones at this point. Phones are sort of just the same. You know, every company's got – you have to get real down to the fine details to get any differentiation between a phone at this point. And it would be more interesting.
The guy with a big camera bump. Okay.
Well, the – you know, I think the specs on this ROG Ally, this ASUS ROG Ally, are interesting. Runs Windows 11, has the AMD Zen 4 RDNA 3 chip, 120
custom
hertz
version of that for
this
build. Yeah,
runs at 1920 by 1080. Supposedly the cooling fans are quiet and it's light, only 608 grams. So basically, like a direct Steam Deck competitor. Interesting that you know run Windows on it. I think part of the magic of the Steam Deck is the Steam front end. And so, you know, I think it's healthy to have this market sort of and inevitable to have this market and have some new entrants into it. And we'll see how well they do. I think Steam's brand name and just sort of the ease of having your Steam library already there. But then, you know, if it's running Windows 11, you just run Steam from. So I guess it would work similarly in that way.
Valve's like, oh no, a competitor where people will still buy games from our store.
Yeah. Very, very true. Yeah. The PlayStation one is a little more baffling to me because I understand that they're all in on this remote play thing. I've used remote play a handful of times, not often. It works fine. But to me, the question of a handheld is, can I play it on an airplane? And if the answer is no, then I don't think I need that. You know, I think the idea is the whole joy of the Steam Deck and things like it are that when you don't have internet, you still have some games on your thing that you can play.
And can if you play it on a train? Can you play it on a plane? Yeah. Can you play it with a
Dr. ASUS needs to come in here and tell me. Anyway, so I just find that to be a strange use case. If you have to be internet connected in order to get any games on it, which again, these are all speculations. We don't know how this thing's going to work, but if that is accurate, then it just seems to me like a non-starter for me personally. But
I don't know. That it sings to me because the more remote play and the more access ports you give something, the more a company like mine can hack into it and use it for accessibility means, where, you know, the big companies usually will look the other way when we do shenanigans to make people be able to use them for, you know, being able to play games that they sell. So usually they're happy with us about selling their games. So we'll see how that goes. I guess I kind of, because I have a bit of a streamer brain now, because, you know, I do Able Gamers full time, but I'm also a content creator. And I think about Steam all the time because, you know, we're all dinosaurs here. But, you know, for the younger people who are in their, you know, 20s, do they still have the Steam loyalty that a lot of us do? Like, I know when I get a free game on Epic, if I really like it, I'll buy it on Steam just because I want it on in my damn library. You know? And so.
That's a great question. I don't know. I it feels like Steam is still dominant, but maybe that is my old dinosaur brain looking at something and assuming.
I don't know.
It's a good question. But I think, Christian, the way you presented the stories, plural, which, again, breaking the rules. But
it's an Oreo.
The way you presented them, I think, is accurate in that it kind of demonstrates the health of the handheld market, which – for a while wasn't doing so hot. You know, I think pre-Switch, you know, the 3DS didn't do well. You know, it was not living up to the old DS's standards. And there's a lot of questions as to whether handheld gaming was kind of waning. And that is certainly not the case anymore. And I think that's maybe the best takeaway from these two, not one, stories.
Sorry, anyway. The story is two new handhelds are coming. One maybe, one released as an April Fool's joke. But yes, really. There, Jeff, are you let me write it up. I'll publish it to my blog. Clickety click, 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 click. My story of the week, Jeff's an idiot coming in. And
I'm attempted to take this Joseph Staten leaving Xbox story, which is interesting. But you know what? It's my story of the week. So I'm going to pick the story that's most interesting to me, and that is – not one, but two different movies that are being made. See, that's me. That's me doing three stories as one.
Hold on, let me get this up on my blog real quick. Joseph Stanton's leaving Xbox while two new video game movies are announced.
So there are two new video game movies that have been announced. One, a little more information about than the other, but I think they're both pretty fascinating. And hey, I got movie video games on the brain because I took my son to see Super Mario Brothers movie today, which evidently so did most of the world because that movie is crushing at the box office right now. And rightfully so. It's tons of fun. But, you know, we are in, I think, a video game to movie or TV show assance, if I can assance it, you know, with Last of Us, you know, dominating the TV airwaves, Super Mario Brothers dominating the movie theaters. I think we can safely say it's happening. And so there is a gold rush. There is a new desire to get all of these properties converted into movies and TV shows. And so some new information this week about a new Street Fighter movie. What? Okay. Don't know much about it, but we know that it is being developed by Legendary Entertainment, which did Detective Pikachu, Godzilla versus Kong, Pacific Rim, some heavy hitters in the genre filmmaking department.
We know that it opens with Ryu's dog being killed and Ryu getting back into the business.
Played by Keanu Reeves.
Hey, I'm in. You guys, I'm in. And then yeah. The other one is a little bit more solid in that it has a release date. 2025, we'll see the Minecraft movie starring everybody's obvious choice for a Minecraft character, Jason Momoa.
And it actually opens with his dog dying.
So it's directed by Jared Hess. This is Napoleon Dynamite himself. And, yep. And, the brothers that did that. And Jason Momoa. So I'm so curious how they're going to make a Minecraft movie. Evidently it's live action, which I think
it's just Jason Momoa playing Minecraft, like just streaming.
That could probably sell. But I don't know how you do a Minecraft movie live action. This one seems a little riskier to me. But, Steven, I'm curious, what do you think of Street Fighter? Do you think there's a good Street Fighter movie to be made? Because we've seen a couple of Street Fighter movies already, and I don't know if I would qualify them as good.
I was just literally talking tonight with my Twitch chat about The Rock and Disney's obsession right now with making their content into live action stuff. And, The Rock, with Black Adam being a huge flop and getting sued and all kinds of shenanigans going on with that, and yet still coming out of the gate making new Disney stuff. He's the only actor in the world that could lose $100 million and people are still like, I still want to work with that guy. So, I think it's great. But my challenge to chat when a lot of people were saying like, oh, I don't want a live action. I don't want this. I'm like, yeah, but it has The Rock. So you're going to go watch it. And like most of chat was like, yeah, okay, I will go watch whatever The Rock is. And I think I kind of feel like it's, I feel like just before our time, and probably most everyone listening, was like the era of vehicle movies, right? You had like Elvis Presley, who was in a bunch of movies that were complete and utter trash, but they were starring Elvis Presley. They were vehicles. They called them vehicle movies because the movie, the script didn't matter. No one cared about that. It was, let's watch Elvis. And so I kind of wonder if video game-esque era, as Jeff said, is going to kind of be a magical mashup of that. At least in my brain, I think it could be if they play their cards right. You could please the geeky nerd crowd that we are with seeing our favorite video games on the big screen with, steamy scenes from The Witcher or action pack from, Uncharted. You could see those kind of things live action, which could be fun, while also a vehicle for your favorite stars to flex themselves and get people to sell, you know, tickets just to see that particular star. So it could be good, but then again, there's the other side of the, you know, I think it just takes a couple of flops and then every single production is going to be like, you know what? Maybe this video game thing wasn't for us. So
Yeah, it's either, you know, it's either comic books where, you know, things work and then it's all that all the time and all we're going to get is video game movies, or it's comic books from the 90s and a few of them flop and no one tries it for a while. I think you make great points. And I'm certainly, you know, certainly putting, Chris, what's his name? Who plays Mario? What can I think of his last
Pratt.
Name?
Chris Pratt.
I want to say Pine. Yeah, he's in the Dungeons and Dragons movie. All the Chris's, but putting Chris Pratt in the Mario movie is an example of that. And
it's a Ryu.
It's a Ryu.
I'm putting my own take on Ryu's voice. It's fine. I am a white guy playing a Japanese fighter, but I'm putting my own take on his voice.
I'm a white guy playing a Japanese person who's voiced by an Italian person being played by someone from Brooklyn who's actually from San Diego. Yes. Yeah.
I have a hard time imagining how a live action Minecraft movie is not going to be terrible. Jason Momoa, you know, I like the guy. He's very charismatic and very fun, but certainly does fall in line with what you're describing, Steven.
Mortal Kombat. I mean, that to me, again, and this is the problem, is I feel like sometimes it's you're getting old, right, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I love the original Mortal Kombat movie. It was still, in my opinion, the best with Johnny Cage and whatnot, I know a lot of people who like the new one that just came out on Netflix. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe they can do it better.
I do wonder if live action just means Jason Momoa gets sucked into the Minecraft. You know, like what
Jumanji.
Is? Yeah, like what is like the live action Lion King? Yeah. It's like that's just the more realistic animated Lion King, or like the live action Little Mermaid. Mm. Half of her is live action; the other half of all the people is animated. So I think there's room there, and I think Mario has shown, and Sonic was live action. And Jeff, you and I are famous on this podcast for predicting what the Tetris movie would be.
We got that. Nailed it.
So,
no, we did not.
You know, I never doubt the video game adaptation, right? Like they'll,
maybe
they'll
it'll
make
be,
it work.
Maybe it'll be brilliant. Jason Momoa as what's his name from Founding Mojang. anyway,
I don't know, like what. But, I mean, when are we going to get another, what was the one starring the kid from the Wonder Years?
The Wizard, right? Yeah.
Like, when are we going to get another, legendary picture where it is someone who is a video gamer who is a champion and comes in and does something great? We have not even heard wind of anything like that. It's always, you know, a reproduction, The Last of Us in the world, you know, which is great, but there's still this kind of weird trope that video game players are still the outsiders. And I think that exemplifies the best from my mind is someone said they liked the Mario movie, but it was as if someone was playing the game for me. And I don't know why anyone would pay to watch somebody else play a game. And I was like, oh, actually, I know a lot of people who pay money to watch somebody play a game.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe Jason Momoa, it gets into a Minecraft construction competition. I think you're right. It's interesting that it's still not about players. Yeah.
I mean, we had players, but now you can't even watch players.
That's a very good show, though. I enjoyed that show.
It's nowhere now, though. It's been taken off.
Did it take it off?
Yeah, it's not even available to stream. They're trying to licensing, blah, blah, blah. But it was good.
It was good. All right, well, there's your news. Let's jump in and talk about the games that we have been playing now in a segment we call The Playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on The Playlist. Steven, what has been on your playlist this week?
I am completely the opposite of playing the new versus the hot. And when I look at your lists for what you're going to talk about, I am straddling the fence where I've got my favorite thing right now, which is a roguelite called Crime Boss, and it is super not wholesome, non-friendly, non-what this audience probably listens to your game, where you're a crime lord trying to take over a fake city, which is has been something that was like, it's got some weird parts to it I don't approve of. Some of the language is a little anti what I like to hear in my video games in my real life, but I like the roguelite element of an RPG. I haven't seen that before, and I'm hoping that maybe it does well enough that other games will do that with a little less violence and a little more fun. But it's been really cool, and I've been enjoying just goofing around in that world with old school songs and whatnot from, you know, all these CG characters from people that you knew back in yesteryear. So that was kind of interesting.
It's like a Payday like, right?
Yeah,
it's GTA Payday. It's got that same level of violence, that same level of swearing and words that aren't really appropriate in our world anymore because it's set in the 90s before they, you know, understood that you shouldn't be a dirtbag, you know. And you know, there are going to be people who will not play it because of that, because, you know, they should have done better. And you can see it because sometimes the words they say don't match the subtitles. They definitely realized it after the voice casting. Like, oh, we shouldn't have said that word. So, you know, you can see where they kind of learned some lessons. So I'll be interested to see if maybe they take these old school, like, you know, the Danny Glover character being named Glover. It's just funny to me. Like, I just like that kind of stuff.
This is the one that has like Kim Basinger and Michael Madsen, yep. And, like,
it's like
Danny Trejo and like all the, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely roguelite heavy. It's definitely nostalgia for those who grew up in the, you know, the Lethal Weapon era, that kind of thing.
Right.
But, you know, it's for the crowd that likes GTA and likes heist games and that kind of thing. It's not necessarily your most wholesome content, but it is just something to goof off with.
Vanilla Ice and Chuck Norris are also in it.
Yep.
So you're digging it because it's just, you're playing with friends and you got that roguelite.
Yeah. Whenever you play through it, you can play with friends, but you also get the roguelite because as you die, you still get experience, which carries over to other games, which makes your character stronger. And there's not a lot of games like that. Like, you could argue that WoW and things like that do that as you get better gear and whatnot, but this is purely based on perks and based on experience of character, which is just something I'm a big fan of. In like Dead Cells kind of games, you know, where you have a run and you have an experience level and you keep getting better and the game gets easier. So those kind of things are just interesting, and I kind of like that they tried something a little different.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of that roguelike experience, and doing it in a first-person shooter I think is interesting as well. And this game looks really interesting. Crime Boss Rockay City is the full title. I'm seeing it here on the Epic Games Store. What else is on your playlist?
Yeah, I went from the extreme of ultra violent to ultra not with Marvel Snap. I swear I've spent in the last like 5 months it's been out, I've probably spent 400 hours. It's such a great game. It's just a card game that you pull up on your phone and it literally takes 3 minutes to do a Hearthstone style battle with comic book characters. I'm a huge comic book nerd. Iron Man is, you know, one of my heroes, and you know, so getting to play with the Marvel IP has been fantastic from a nerd point of view, but from a I love Hearthstone kind of view, the guy who did it, Ben Brodes, is actually the guy who invented Hearthstone. So it's another hit from him, and just basically having 3 minute battles of what these superheroes can do versus another team of superheroes from your enemy. And it was like super wholesome card combat, no violence, no anything that, you know, a 10-year-old couldn't play. It is a little bit microtransaction-y. You can play it for free, but if you want to play seriously, you know, you do have to pump in the money to get the cards. And so I think it's that weird sort of, if you want to just play around between meetings, I think it's fun. If you want to get serious about it, just like Hearthstone, it's going to eat your wallet.
Are you in that latter category?
I am ridiculously in that latter category. I'm like, you know, new card, here's my $20. I'm probably like $150 in the Marvel Snap at this point. But for 400 hours of entertainment, that's not bad.
Not bad. Yeah, I fell off of it because the penalty, the ranking penalty for a new season start, I felt was a little too harsh. But I've been getting emails from people who are like, they fixed it, they changed it, they fixed it, and so I have been reluctant to hook it back up to my veins.
Yeah, it takes you get every rank is essentially 100 of what they call cubes. And right now, if you level up to, say, 70, it puts you at 75 to start. Now, you can fall backwards from that, but yeah. It starts you in the middle, which really helps with if you're trying to grind and get to the top level. You don't have to play as many games to get to the same place that you would have gotten anyway. So yeah, that helps with it a lot, especially if someone like me, like I really like, and we all know because we have these kind of day jobs where, you know, you got a call that went 50 minutes and it's like, well, 10 minutes is not enough time to do something else. And it's not enough time to start a new call. What do I do for 6.5 minutes? Oh, let's go open this game real quick and one card game. Let's go.
You're so right. There's always time for Marvel Snap. Even when there isn't, there's always time.
That's right.
Marvel Snap. Yeah. Man, I gotta get back into it. I keep
waiting for DC to announce that Ben is going to head up their games initiative, you know, at this
right.
point where it's like,
yeah, right. Wonderful. All right, cool. Christian Spicer, what is on your playlist this week?
So I'm super excited that I get to talk about it this week because there's, you know, heaven forbid, a little bit of a lull in hot new releases. I mean, don't get me wrong, they're coming. We just can't talk about them right now.
My backlog disagrees with you so heavily, but go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, no. Same. I mean, that's what this is also. But the Forza Horizon 5 DLC's fave of the year it came out. We were big fans of Forza Horizon 5. The second DLC pack, the Rally Adventure, came out, I think it was the end of last month. Yeah. And also what has come out for Forza Horizon 5 on PC is DLSS 3.0 support, which it had added some stuff before that made it look prettier on PC, but not full DLSS 3.0 support. But it has that now. Rally Adventure. So I will start by saying, yes, still fave of the year game. Like, yes, nothing has changed. The game is still incredible. Also, DLSS 3.0 implementation in Forza Horizon 5 is so dang good, fellas.
It's real pretty.
Real pretty and real fast. Mm-hmm. The frame rate, again, I'm playing on a 4080, which is, you know, you need a 40 series card to take advantage of DLSS. But its implementation in Forza Horizon 5 is phenomenal. It's a game that already looked great. Like I'll still play it sometimes on my Xbox Series S, like with the kids on the couch and stuff like that. And it still looks good. I'm playing in 60 frames per second and we're sitting far from the TV and it looks good. But sitting here at my gaming PC playing this game with, you know, at 144 frames per second, everything on like extreme or whatever it is, it just absolutely looks phenomenal. And I love when great games continue to get what I consider great tech added to it throughout its lifespan. Like they didn't rest on their laurels. It was already a great game, already had a lot of graphical options, already looked great. And then they added this into it, which is awesome. So that's just the DLSS 3.0 part of it. Rally Adventure is the second big DLC expansion for the game. The first one being Hot Wheels, which was almost my favorite game of the year. It came out. It's such a good expansion. I loved Hot Wheels in, was that 3? Did the first Hot Wheels expansion, Forza Horizon? I forget. Mm-hmm. And then it's fantastic again in 5. And now this Rally Adventure expansion is kind of bringing the game back to its kind of, dare I say, roots, because, you know, Forza Horizon was born out of another game's roots, but it brings it back. It grounds it in a way where it is still very much Forza Horizon. And, you know, you're cutting through cactus fields and going off all the stuff that you can do in Forza, but you're no longer on Hot Wheels tracks up in the sky, riding around past dinosaurs. It is their take on Rally. And Rally is, you know, multi-surfaced driving, typically two folks in a car, one person with a map charting out what you're doing for you. Colin McRae, Sega Rally, those older games, WRX and stuff like that. Dirt Rally. And what I find fascinating about Forza Horizon tackling this is that what makes Rally, in my opinion, part of what makes Rally fun or interesting as a sport is you have a co-pilot telling you what to do. And that's what Rally video games used to be also, whereas a lot of racing games up to that point didn't have that. So you'd know ahead of time without looking at the mini map in your corner, like, oh, hard left coming up, jump, hairpin right, easy left. You know all that stuff because your co-pilot is telling you that. But now with games having the line, you know, the drive line indicator, you kind of have all of that rally information given to you in every driving game. And Forza has already given you multi-surfaced driving, where you'll go from like a road to the dirt to through the water or whatever. And so what I find really interesting about their take on rally is when you go into it, it says, hey, this is a rally experience. Part of what makes rally fun and unique is a co-pilot calling out upcoming things for you. So we would encourage you to turn off the drive line and rely on that. You don't have to keep your drive line on, but we encourage you to give this a try. And so I turned the drive line off. The drive line's still on for everything else, like getting navigation points. If you leave the rally area, it comes back every other race. But when you're doing rally races, if you turn it off, it just does the classic Sega rally style thing of like easy left, easy right. And what I think is smart for how they implemented it is, and it's very Forza Horizon thing, your spotter, your co-pilot is actually in a helicopter flying above you. So of course there's awesome moments where like it's panning over and you hit a jump and you do all this cool stuff. But because some cars don't have two seats in Forza Horizon, so it's like, how do you bring that car into a rally situation? Well, your co-pilot's in a helicopter. That's how we do it in Forza. And it's really fun and really cool. And you can do races two ways. One is a traditional rally, which is a time trial, because you could imagine rally driving. Like if Steve and Jeff and I are on the same course at the same time, that can get pretty dangerous. And there are some Baja and rally type races where you have multiple folks going at a time. But oftentimes it is a one car hits it, you attack the course and you see what it is. So in the rally adventure, you can do that, a rally race, or you can do the standard Forza Horizon race where it is multiple cars on the track. If you want to see that, you know, the drivatars and stuff like that driving through. It's a hoot. I think if I had to say like Hot Wheels is maybe like a smidge higher because of just like the whimsical nature of Hot Wheels tracks. But I was surprised to like this Rally Adventure DLC as much as I do, because I figured it just would be like, oh, it's more Forza, which is good. But like, how do they make it unique? And I think they did a really cool thing with how they make it unique. And you can select like what type of rally you want. You pick a team and it kind of influences which courses you start with and stuff like that. If you have fallen out of Forza Horizon 5, my friends, this is an excellent place to jump back in. And the cars are awesome. It's such a good game. I love it. I absolutely. Oh, and I should say, at least for me, and I imagine this is the case for everybody, the intro cinematic as you go into the Rally Adventure DLC, it's playing the Linda Lindas, an awesome pop punk band who I've parting gift on this show a bunch, and a couple live close to me here in the Pasadena area. They're an awesome band, and it was awesome to hear like their song like kick into high gear as I'm jumping over a marsh or whatever. It's
jumping
so
a marsh.
Good.
I think that's so one of their songs, Jumping a Marsh.
probably not a marsh in a rally. Jumping a dry wash. Sorry.
I've also experienced the DLSS 3.0. I was like, I got to play more Forza Horizon now that it has three. It's silky smooth and beautiful. Just a sumptuous game. Also, Christian and I both invested recently in steering wheels, controllers. And Christian, are you playing it with the wheel?
Some yes, some no. I did because I have it. I actually prefer Forza Horizon without the wheel. This is the game that pulled me out of my PSVR 2 headset VR wheel setup and brought me back to a controller, floating third person cam as I, you know, hoon around the track. What about you?
Yes, I mean the entire time I played Forza Horizon 5, and you know, as you said, we made it our game of the year that year. Our show's cumulative one. I only ever played it in that third person camera view where you get to see your sick car being cool and shiny and beautiful and playing it with a controller. I love the interior cam view, the cockpit view. I love that. But actually with the steering wheel peripheral, I have been playing for the first time in my life. Been playing the like dashboard cam, or not, whatever they call it, like the hood where you're like mounted on the hood.
Screaming Infidelities is what you've been playing. The dashboard confessional.
Dashboard confessionals version. I have a confession to make, and I've been playing with the dashboard cam. the reason for that is I thought with the steering wheel I'd want to be in cockpit mode like I am in Gran Turismo 7. But that's because I'm in virtual reality, and so I'm seeing the stuff that I'm feeling with my hands, when I'm not in virtual reality, when I'm just staring at my screen and I see my wheel, I don't want to see another wheel. It's redundant to have the wheel in front of me. So when I go to that dashboard confessional cam, it's like I'm in a car because I have the steering wheel that I see in front of me and then directly to the dash, to the hood of the car. And it's pretty neat. Pretty darn neat. It's the first time I've ever in my life. I never understood why they even had that view in the game. I know people like playing it, but I'm not a racing guy. I was like, I don't understand this. I don't want to be on a bumper of a car. It doesn't make any sense. Now I get it.
It's real good.
Yeah.
It's real good.
I've not tried that rally thing. I still haven't even splurged for the Hot Wheels thing, but I would
pick Hot Wheels first because I think your son would love it. I mean, some of those, it's loops and it's just, you know, it's full of whimsy. And rally is a very different approach. But also if you or people in your house like, you know, monster trucks, while rally is not monster truck, it gets close with like the dune buggy beetles with the lifted suspension. And you're like, it's like multiple jumps at multiple bumps ahead. One might be a jump into water and you're like, doo, 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 whomp, and then you just catch air and land in water. Oh, it's awesome.
So why do you not want to play it with the wheel? It feels like that's how you got the wheel. Now you play the racing games with the wheel. Now
I play more sim-oriented racing games with the wheel. Forza, I'm pulled back. I want to see as much as I can. I want to, you know, fishtail out, watch my drift. And if I were in VR, I probably would, because you have that sense of space. Like, I've done drifting in Gran Turismo 7 in VR, and I'm obviously playing in that in mode. But flat screen, I have a hard time playing Dashboard Confessional.
All right. Fair enough. I really wish they would support VR and Forza Horizon. Oh my gosh, that would be the cool. And having played it with Gran Turismo now, it's like, come on, please, Forza people, let's do this.
You gave everybody 10 years of Call of Duty, Microsoft. Can you give people a little bit of VR,
please?
Just a little bit.
All right, I want to tell you about what's on my playlist this week. I checked out another indie game this week that really surprised me and is cool. In fact, a friend of the show, Dan Trachtenberg, was the one who texted me about this and let me know about it. I was not on my radar at all. And I think a couple of weeks ago I mentioned Above Snakes Prologue as being a game I really dug. And it was cool that they had a prologue. A prologue being game's not out yet. Game's not even in early access yet. But we have this chunk that kind of shows you what the game is. It's not really a demo. It's more than that. It's like the beginning version of the game. It sets everything up. I think it's a really cool idea. Well, this week,
it's the part of the game written by another author.
The prologue. Yeah. It has characters that aren't in the main story. They all die off. There's this other indie game that I'm about to talk about also has a prologue. The game is not going to be out until, I think, Q3, which I guess is right around the corner at this point. But it's called Shogun Showdown, and I played the Shogun Showdown prologue, and it has me quite excited for the main game. This is a deceptively simple concept that hints at real complexity and real fascinating. It's a take I've never seen before. So the way I would describe Shogun Showdown briefly is like, what if a 2D fighting game, but turn-based? And I know that's kind of happened before. There's like card games like Yomi that'll try to be Street Fighter, but, you know, turn-based. This is not that. This is, you are on a 2D plane. You are a shogun. You are an awesome fighter, and you are in these environments that are all two-dimensional. You are invariably dropped in the center, and you have squares that you can move to. Not very many of them. Again, two-dimensional. So you think like Super Mario, like that's that kind of two-dimensional. So the squares are what you are standing on. So it's not like a board game square. You're not looking down on anything. You're not seeing, you know, a board game. You're seeing the profile of things, and then there are sections of the ground that are broken up into squares. Okay, so there's maybe I don't even know how many there are, but there's not a lot, maybe 8 squares total. And you'll have these enemies that'll be on either side of you or kind of warp in. They come in waves, and you have a certain number of abilities that you have, and you'll get more of them. It is a roguelike, so you're getting more in a run. And at the end of runs, you can spend currency to unlock the potential to get other abilities in the course of the run, like a lot of roguelikes do. And you have these abilities like a slash in front of you, shoot a bow and arrow, grappling hook, long spear, lots of different kind of things, throwing star. And you can queue up one or two of them to go off. And everything is turn-based. Every single thing you do, from moving a square left or right, or even turning your character around, you can like pirouette in place and go, you know, 180 degrees. Your character doesn't move any squares. They just spin in place and move, you know, face the opposite direction. Every single one of those things that you do costs a turn. And every turn that you take, the enemy takes. So everybody's turn happens all like simultaneously. So basically doing anything ticks time forward one move, right? So you are in this dance of movement, of queuing up attacks and shooting off attacks that is choreographed with the enemies that are also moving and trying to do the same. So what you can do is you can queue up multiple attacks in your little queue, and then you decide to shoot them off at any time. And if they're able to, they will happen. You can stack attacks and that'll all happen on a single turn if they're able to. So you get into this really cool, like I said, dance where you're like, okay, and you see everything that the enemies are doing too. You're like, you see them queuing up an attack, they're readying an attack. So you go, okay, so if I move forward, they'll hit me. So I got to move back one, their attack goes off, then I move forward, then I can attack, but there's a guy behind me, so I can like go back, don't want to get in his range. So spin in place makes him move forward, attack him, spin in place, move backward. It's every single thing is this like slow motion choreography of the coolest 2D fighter attack. It's rad. And you get to this level of complexity where you can, you know, queue up these combos because you're able to stack your commands, basically your abilities going off. And you can be like, okay, well, I know that if I trigger my attack sequence to go off, I will kill the first guy in front of me, and then I can shoot an arrow into the next guy who's much farther down the line. And so you get into these really cool, almost like a Rube Goldberg machine of like, this created that, which started that, which made him go over here, which I eliminated all of them. And then you get into these boss fights where the guy does really, you know, much more interesting attacks. And again, it's just the prologue, so it's just the beginning of this, but immediately becomes obvious how complicated and intricate it can get. And I am completely sold on this concept. I think this is brilliant. Again, very simple looking game. It's all pixel art, big, you know, big chunky characters on the screen because there's not a lot to show you. I think this would be a great Steam Deck game. I haven't played it on Steam Deck yet, but it's so you play it. I'm very curious, Steven, it feels a very accessible game too, because while there's no controller support yet, the game is still not even in early access, but you can play it with just a couple of buttons. There's really not much to it. And yet it has this level of complexity that I think is going to get even more and more apparent when the full game is released and they layer on more and more abilities and have all these things to unlock. And it's a really clever idea, and I've never seen anybody do anything like it.
I love roguelikes for that reason, because you can than not be necessarily great at a game and continually fail forward, which I think is,
I agree. Great. That's my whole MO, failing forward.
fail forward, right? Fail progress.
Yeah.
It reminds me of Tights and Fight Spaces. I mean, just while you were talking about it, I looked it up on Keymailer to request a copy. Like it sounds fun.
Yeah.
You know, and I love those kind of games where you can effectually make your moves and then do these battles more as a choreographed fight rather than in real time action. I mean,
yeah,
first person shooter, it's all about who has the superior twitching skills. But things like what you're describing are much more of a mental dance, which is just all about my jam.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really, at first I was like, there's nothing to this. And then you start realizing, oh my gosh, you can really get complicated with how you set up your dominoes to fall. It's pretty clever. So I'm super excited to see where the game goes when it finally is released. Again, it's called Shogun Showdown, and I'm playing the prologue.
How do you guys feel about prologue / demo kind of games? I'm still very on the fence about them because I if I'm going to invest time in a roguelite, I kind of want to put my time into the actual game. But I think it does do some good numbers for sales when you put out a demo ahead of time, because the industry got away from demos and prologues for a long time. And that's a huge accessibility thing, is if you put out a demo, I can tell you right off the bat whether or not I should waste my money on your game or whether I'm going to refund it anyway. So. You know, I feel like it's a good thing, but also I get why people get kind of annoyed with them.
Well, I mean, I think the best case scenario is a prologue that allows you to carry forward your progress, you know, if it like, you know, but I recognize that that's rare. I've been enjoying getting a taste of these games and sort of whetting my appetite for something that's going to come out, you know, quite a bit. You know, it's not like a demo for a game that's already out where it's like, well, I'm going to either, you know, am I going to waste my time, invest time that is not brought forward into the game? This feels more like, oh, now this game is on my radar. Now I know to be excited about it, and I'll be playing other things in the meantime. And then when it comes out, I'm like, oh yeah, I loved playing that. So,
yeah, no, I'm glad to hear you also using an indie game, like, with all due respect to Forza, of course, you know, it's just such a mainstream game. Everyone's heard of Forza, right? But
yeah,
you know, I know that the problem I'm having, and I've been sharing this with viewers because I feel like people kind of resonate with, is there's a huge problem that I have now with games. I love games. I love our industry. But there was an article I read not long ago that said, you know, 12 years ago, 300 games came out on Steam per year. Now it's nearly 300 a day. It's getting to the point where, you know, there are some great games out there that I have accidentally stumbled upon on WooVit or Keymailer or one of these sites that promotes games that, you know, I just happened to fall on because I'd never heard of it. It's got no promotion. They have no money to get you any influencers talking about it, you know, and you know, kind of the Among Us thing, right? Among Us was out there for a year and a half before one streamer played it, and Domino Effect. Now it's the most popular game that's, you know, social pandemic game ever, right? So I just like when we talk about those games, no disrespect to AAAs, but, you know, I even listed AAAs in my what I'm playing right now, but I also have been playing some non-AAAs that I think I'd like to see us kind of remember that there's some good ones out there that you can play that don't necessarily. I played a cool indie game called Potion Tycoon. It's literally where you make potions in a little mystical wizard world, and it's early access, so I don't really talk about it because, you know, the early access, they're not done baking it yet, but they're fun. There's some fun games that just don't have that AAA marketing budget that I hope people remembered not to look over just because it's not advertised at PAX doesn't mean it's not good.
I agree 100%. I always make it a point to try to bring up as many indie games as I can on the show that I've been enjoying. And I always make it a point to like search out interesting stuff that's in the indie world. I agree with you. I have no idea how anyone makes money making video games at this point. There's such a glut of content. And
I assume it's all money laundering. Like everybody's making games to lose money. Like that's part of the.
And it's only going to get crazier with, you know, how you know, these tools. We talked about Unreal Engine 5's presentation at GDC about being, you know, making easier and easier and easier for people. It's only going to get more saturated because it's just going to be easier for games, you know, really great games to be made. We all win because there's lots and lots and lots of great stuff to play. There's too much at a certain point, and a lot of stuff falls through the cracks. And so that's why, you know, I try to make it a point to do that. And even our show, you know, at the end of the year, we always do our top five games of the year. And then we do five not even dark horses, but games that most people wouldn't even put on a top 10 list because they're so small and unique and interesting. But I really, you know, I've always wanted to highlight that kind of stuff because oftentimes, like you said, a lot of people don't hear about them. And at the same time, they might be some of the most interesting things happening in video games. You know, there's such people taking risks because it's at a smaller scale. They're you know, less expensive games to make. And I don't think you'd see something like this, you know, Shogun Showdown. And it's such a fascinating idea. Somebody really came up with something fresh and interesting to do with a turn-based game. And so, yeah, I love stuff like that.
I'm hoping, and again, this is me. I'm going to try to stay away from a tangent that'll take us to a 3-hour show. But I hope that the ChatGPTs, the Bard of the world, will help us with some. I hope that maybe one of the things we get out of the new AI overlords is that they will help us sift through the amount of content out there that is good for us. I mean, anecdotally and very quickly, there was a game called Fermi's Paradox. If you've never heard of it, it's essentially just what it sounds like. It's a Fermi Paradox is the idea that all civilizations die because you reach a point where civilizations just cannot get through, whether it's social, it's global, it's whatever, and you play global, you know, Galactic Gardener, basically God, and you're raising up species on different worlds and different universes, and you're helping them get through things. And I'm like, I'm playing this on stream because I just happened to open up the email with the promotion. And I'm telling you, it is the most engaged my chat has been. I had almost 3 times the amount of chat engagement that night playing that game. I played it 4 more times because of that, because how popular it was. Everybody was loving it. And it was just a random blow off. That looks fun. Why not? And I'm like, I can't believe it. I can't wait to see this game once it's fully up. Oh, it's been out for 6 years. Like, holy crap. Why did I not hear about this game before? And it's just because the photo on the promotion just happened to catch my eye, and it just got lucky, and it was totally a game for me, totally from my community. It was 100% interactive and fun, and it's like, how do you, where I'm going with all this is I don't know how you find those. I do not know. I know they're out there. I know there are games that I would love if I could find them, but I don't know if I'll ever find them.
Yeah, I agree. And I guess that's why, you know, hopefully folks like us and you know, other people that do make content are trying to find the diamonds in the rough, you know, and share them with their audience. You talk about the, you know, the ChatGPTs of the world helping at that. You know, I don't mean to be doom and gloom, but that's kind of already what's happening with, like, you know, resumes for hiring. You know, that the most places that hire use a version of AI to sort of sift through and narrow the field. And it's fraught with problems. And it makes me worried. It's like, is that what we're just looking at now? Is literally everything is going to be that? Is, you know, people writing resumes to appease the AI, you know, rather than actually any humans. And that's my worry, is that people will be, you know, marketing video games to appease the AI selection process.
You joke, maybe not joke. That's already happening, though, where you market video games, the blog post is SEO optimized.
That's true.
Right? Yeah. And like where that you put an ad above, you know, you put your Killzone 2 ad ahead of Halo Reach, you know, or when someone searches for Halo Reach, you would see Killzone 2 to use two very old games.
I love your reference from
trying not to 2007 current modern game. So yeah, if you search for The Last of Us Part 1, you're going to get the Plague Tale, you know, ad shows up or vice versa. And like, that's all over the App Store. It's everywhere and it's hard to escape it. I too would love a good friendly recommendation engine, but I think the problem with it, Stephen, and I think there's a 99% invisible podcast about this. I think it might be called The Problem with Search, which I think would apply here, which is like once something has an economic locomotive behind it, it quits being the best version of the thing.
Well,
because people use it to Make that money.
It's funny because just listening to you talk about it, Christian, you know, the one thing I was thinking, you know, the system I love the most in the world is Netflix. Honestly,
yeah.
Netflix's way of knowing and understanding that we watch a lot of crap and that we don't necessarily love it. And it only uses the algorithm to figure out, okay, you like this, but do you really, really like this? And there's a level above like that you can click. And, you know, then that's what it uses for your algorithm. I think that is so far, I've loved it. Yeah, I do worry that it's corrupt. And of course, it could be, you know, hey, here's a movie coming to giving $100,000 to Netflix to make sure that that ends up in my feed. Yes, that could be Elon Musk. Absolutely. But at the same time, there's nothing like that in video games. I mean, I'm a streamer. I understand I'm an outlier, but I play a lot of games that I have no interest in. I played, you know, 200 or some games on my stream. I've liked 30 of them. You know what I mean? So, like, that's the 30 I'd like you to select, you know? But I feel like that's not so different than you guys with your reviews and also the listeners, right? How many games have y'all gotten in your Steam library from a friend who doesn't know you that well, who you play all kinds of first-person shooters and, you know, tactical games, and they gifted you Mamma Mia Cooking, and you're like, thank you, I guess? I don't, you know. And
then
the algorithm's like, oh, you want cooking games? Here you go.
That's Netflix, sorry, Jeff. Netflix needs a home screen that it shows you when your friends are over. It's just like prestige TV, you know? Like just the good stuff. And then there's like your friend's gone. We got you, boo. You know,
like, here's your Love is Blind, buddy. We got you.
Cheer, season 4 made just for you. And you're like, thank you.
That's funny. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting you hold Netflix up as the paragon, because I think that I think Steam very much wants to be that. You know, it tries really hard to be that. Like, hey, look, here's what if you like these games, you'll probably like these games, and here's other people in your friends list are playing this. Yep. It's trying so hard to be that.
It is. It needs a better barometer than playtime. That's what it's currently using, is how long did you play the game? And the problem is sometimes I play games because I'm just confused by them, or I'm trying to make myself like them. Sometimes I want to like a game. I'm like, oh, come on, everyone loves this game. I'm really going to like The Last of Us. And that's not always the greatest way to do it. Sometimes, unfortunately, we just end up spending time on crap, and you know, that's the name of the game. And you know, I've got so many I could name on here that are in my Steam library that are not great, but they're in there. And I don't want Steam being like, oh, I see that you love Heist Kitty multiplayer. Well, let me show you another thing. No, please don't.
That's hilarious. Amazing. Well. I, you know, it's been a long time since we've talked board games, but I want to carve out a little tabletop time for something very specific. So let's do that right now. This week, I love talking about board games and tabletop games, and I love doing it for positive reasons, but unfortunately this week I think it's going to be a sad reason that we have to bring up tabletop games, because we got some sad news this week. Klaus Tuber, the guy who created Settlers of Catan, which has now been called just Catan, passed away, and I think he leaves a large footprint. He was a titan. Basically ushered in the age of designer board games. And Steven, I know you are a fan of Catan, and were sad to see his passing as well, right?
I was, and you know, I definitely, for those of you who didn't want to hear any sad on the podcast today, you can write your angry mail to me stevenhatemail@gmail.com. Actually, I don't know who that is. Don't do that. Oh man, I feel bad for that person now. The sad thing for me is always when something that you loved and that creator is gone, you don't know who it is. I really don't know much about that person, but I do know that that person's idea has brought me moments of joy and fun in my life. During the pandemic, I had never played Catan before, but for disabled people like myself that don't get to get out that much because the world's not that accessible for us anyway, it was the one silver lining. Everything else was bad, but the one silver lining was suddenly people who are normally out and busy are trapped inside, and then we can be like, hey, we got it, we got you, baby, let's go. Tabletop simulator, it's the same thing as being in real life, let's go. And because I was able to convince my friends to get in and play on those games, you know, we were able to have Catan nights, not something that I can't physically participate in. And I got to fall in with a whole new group of friends who were supportive and loving, and I'm happy to be in that group now. But it was because of Catan. So, you know, it's a silly game where you get to trade cards and trade resources and lie to each other and backstab. And it's a social deception game where you're fighting against your friends, but you get to hate your friend during the game, and as soon as it's over, the hate goes away, and you're just like, all right, back to normal. Like, so it's pretty great. You know, you can be mad your friend wouldn't give you his wood for your sheep, you know? So, you know, and that kind of thing I think is just fun, and I think has created, for me anyway, a lot of good moments. You two like board games, so I'm going to guess you too.
Yes. I mean, I love board games. Settlers of Catan was one of those games that opened my eyes to what board games could be. And I think for a lot of people, I mean, it came out in 1995. And you know, you grow up, if you're like me, grew up an American kid, you play, you know, Clue and Monopoly and a bunch of garbage games, you know, and you think that's what board games are, right? And then some guy named Klaus Tuber makes a game that literally fixes all the problems of board games, where it's like, oh, I do something on everybody's turn. I'm not just sitting around waiting for my little sister to go. Just make a move. Just do anything. No, I get to have fun on every turn. You know, a different person's rolling the dice, but maybe that means something good for me, because maybe my little plot of land comes up and I get some cool stuff, and on their turn I can exchange items with them, and there's this like social layer and this dialogue that we're having. And it was a total revelation to me at that time. And I think for a lot of people, it kind of, like I said, it ushered in this whole era that we're in, the golden age of now, of designer board games. Klaus Tuber's name was on that box, you know, and it's an amazing thing. I mean, he won the Spiel des Jahres, which is the most prestigious board gaming award. He won it 4 times. He's a titan. His kids run his company. The Catan name turned into an empire. And he died.
They got all the wood and all the sheep.
They got all the brick, all of it.
They traded in all the cards.
Exactly. And you can buy it now. They just came out this last year. They came out with these like insanely expensive, like 3D full terrain versions of it. I covet them, but I'm not going to spend like $300 on a Catan set. But man, I'm tempted.
Narrator,
if you want to sponsor us, Catan Company, the three of us would love a set.
Agreed. Yes, agreed. he died this last week. He was only 70, which seems to me very young age these days. It's a sad thing to see him pass, but what a legacy he left. I think it's wonderful, Stephen, that you wanted to bring it up and mention what Catan meant to you, and certainly meant a lot to me. I have many, many editions of Catan in my house, and there's been many different versions of the game, and it still works. It's still a beautiful experience. It's still a really easy game to teach. You can get up and playing it in no time, and everybody loves it. You know, it's a universal, wonderful game. He seemed like a genuinely sweet man too, by all accounts.
I would love to hear from like your viewers, or if you two ever invite, one of the game psychologists onto your podcast, like you'll have to flag me and make me listen to an episode if you do, because you mentioned Monopoly, and let's be honest, I bet everybody in this call and also listening at some point has gotten into a fight in real life with someone over Monopoly or Risk. There are games that are friendship testers, and sometimes you don't pass the test. Like, there is something weird about those games that just it carries over. And Catan, you know, it is wild. Even when the game feels bad, even when you got ganged up on and people just sabotaged you on purpose to make sure that you lost, like, there's something about it afterwards that you're just like, oh, well, on to the next. And I don't know what that is. I don't know how he captured that magic, but somehow he figured out that the PvP board games feel bad. And he figured out a way to make it feel like you're not wasting your time and you didn't hurt your friend. You're just having fun in a game. You're being silly, trading sheep for wood and whatever else. And you know, and you still get to jab at your friend and block him here and there. And you know, it's just fun. And I would love psychologically to find out, why is it so different? Why if, you know, my friend takes over Africa and loses me the game, am I super mad? But if he blocks me from getting longest road, I'm like, eh, whatever, you jerk.
It probably has something to do with the fact that it's the whole aesthetic is just meadows and sheep. It's very calming, you know. It's very sweet. But yeah, you know, you're right. It's a sad thing to see him pass, but I'm glad to have the opportunity to reflect on really a guy who changed the world. Like his board game, it was a huge, huge part in where we are now with designer board games and what people are able to do. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. Yeah. All right. Well, with that said, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Steven Spahn, it is such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for coming back and being here today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, you know, this is one of the favorite ones I got to do pre-pandemic, just because you guys like to have fun, and it's a lot of my life is talking about accessibility, so it's good to be able to just talk about games and be goofy talking about what we're doing right now, and I think that's part of the charm of the great show here.
Wonderful. Well, I appreciate that. You are welcome back anytime, but in the meantime,
I need to asterisk, unless this show ushers in yet another pandemic, then
yeah, that would be bad. That would be accident. Then it, yeah, then it really why, feels like it was our fault. Yeah,
yeah. That's, yeah, like the three horse people came together and we caused it. So we'll see, but TBD.
But if you know, if the Catan people send us that super expensive set, it'll all equal out. That's all I'm saying. Steven, tell folks where they can keep up with you, and again, repeat, you know, your gala event and all of the great stuff that you do online.
Yeah, you know, you can find me everywhere under Steven Spahn, S-P-O-H-N. I'm on all the social medias. Twitter used to be my main hangout until a certain Musk sort of took over a lot of it. Now it may be crumbling a little bit like Neverending Story, but I'm still there for now. you know, streaming in part-time is kind of one of my passions, and that's kind of what led to the idea in my head of the Able Gamers Gala. You know, I'm a person and a content creator, and I hate in some circles how my name is Steven from Able Gamers, but I love what I do. I love helping people with disabilities, and so if you're in the game to help out a charity that is just doing for 16 years now, actually almost 17, going on and helping the world by allowing people with disabilities to play video games just like you love to do, you can do so by supporting Able Gamers. We have a really cool event that's called the Able Gamers Gala coming up on April 22nd, 4 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening to this in the future, beyond that, also tickets still being on sale and having the ability to donate to the charity itself. This event is just to raise donations. You know, we do a lot with streamers where they do streaming events and it takes from their income, or you do those things where you pay $500 for an egg that's Fabergé that you have no idea what the freak you're going to do with a $5 egg that's, you know, $5,000. We try to skip and cut out all of that and just go, hey, here's this cool event. Come hang out with us. Come meet all the streamers that you love from the streaming community, personalities you know from the internet. You know, I'd love to see you guys there and advertising it out to your communities just to come by. Say hello. The first couple of hours, we'll be meeting people like yourselves who have communities that love and support them, and then asking them to come give a donation for the opportunity to say hello. So it's kind of a meet and greet of sorts, and then getting to do cool things like announcing a world video with World of Warships, brand new video that we're premiering, or getting to hear headliner Brian Weck from NSP, like, you know, the millions of followers that they've got coming in, and getting to headbang out with Brian's ninja shenanigans. So should be fun. I hope it's first of its kind in the charity industry, and unfortunately it's not something I could pitch in less than 5 seconds.
Well, that is awesome. All right, Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
I have a newsletter, send it once a month or so at tinyletter.com/Christian Spicer, where you can subscribe to that. I also have a website where you can see other goings on, a blog occasionally. It's christianspicer.com, where you can also buy copies, physical copies of my graphic novel Consequences, which I'm very proud of. I have some extras From We Made That, that folks can buy at the website there. And then also, no one told me I couldn't say it. I'm joining one of my favorite podcasts this week to talk about one of the biggest movie openings ever. To be what? On the Filmcast and talk about Mario. Can I say that? I said it.
You too said late. It. I said it. It's on. It's happening.
I yeah, said it. Check Can't it take out. It back now, Jeff.
No. Somebody else invited you. I didn't invite you.
Well, no, because someone else has good taste and runs a successful podcast.
Well, that's true. Check out the Filmcast. It's good fun. Show I do every week. Christian will be on. We'll be talking the Super Mario Brothers movie. There'll be a limerick. What could go wrong? Also, I do another show called the We Have Concerns with Anthony Carboni, who you may be seeing talking Star Wars this week at the Star Wars celebration. He's hosting stuff, but we do a show about science and comedy. I also do a sports show called The Fan Controlled Show. You can find that at Fan Controlled Sports and Entertainment. All that stuff everywhere you get podcasts. So check it out. You can find me on Twitter at Jeff Canado, which is spelled with two N's and one T. And again, email us here. DLCfeedback@gmail.com. His brain stopped working. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Hey, give us a suggestion. Steven, do you have a recommendation to help people get through their week?
I do. I have been watching a show on Netflix called New Amsterdam. It's a medical drama that is like kind of like the Haken back to ER. Reminds me of that kind of show. I loved ER when I was growing up. It was good. The writing on it kind of falls off after a couple of seasons, but the first couple of seasons are amazing. Has like one of the first deaf actresses in a main lead romance role in the show, and that's pretty darn cool. So I'm always a fan of inclusiveness.
Yeah. So New Amsterdam, and is that on Netflix?
The first four is on Netflix, and then you got to have Peacock if you want to watch the last season, because it just ended, like the series ended in March. So it's just freshly wrapped. You can watch the whole thing.
Right
that
on.
Sounds like Steven's prestige Netflix queue, not his honest Netflix queue.
Yeah, it's my prestige Peacock network. Only I can access it.
Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
NBA playoffs. We are in it. Lakers have limped. I guess they didn't limp in. They limped out of the season and now kind of surge, but we're only able to finish in seventh place. So they have a play-in game. Your Golden State Warriors, Jeff, secured the sixth seed. Yep. I love playoff sports, basically. So if you listen to the show for the 9+ years we've been doing it, you've probably heard me mention some sport and when it's playoff seasons. This is your chance, fair weather fans, pick a team and go all in. Like just have fun rooting for it. And hopefully you're not disappointed, or learn what it feels like to suffer a crushing defeat and the weight of knowing it doesn't impact your life at all. But my gosh, will it ruin a weekend?
Oh, it sure will.
How do you sell someone on the NBA who feels like there is just so many games to watch, kind of like baseball?
That's why it's playoffs now.
Watch the playoffs.
Nothing matters. Nothing matters.
Nothing matters anymore.
Yeah, it's a short season. Pretend those other teams don't exist. Look at the logos. Pick your favorite. Pick a number one ranked team if you want to have a good odds of watching a few series and just have fun with it. I think what the NBA is hard because the season is long and it's a very physical game. And there's back to backs and teams rest their star players because they have to. But it makes for unexciting middle of the year games to watch. But the playoffs now, everybody's playing their best folks. Hopefully they're all rested and injury free. And you have these stars playing like their life depends on it. You know, like the intensity of playoff basketball, I think, is unmatched in their series. Like, I love March Madness, but one and done is harsh. And seeing some of these teams battle back, I mean, nothing to do with you, Jeff, but like when Cleveland won it in seven games against Golden State, like apart from the teams, it's just mind-blowing drama.
Heartbreaking is what you said. It was a
mind-blowing drama of watching teams battle over a course of a series. So this is a perfect time to jump in, Steven. And then after the playoffs, forget basketball exists again until next year's playoffs.
Yeah. My parting gift is a little self-serving, but I'm going to use it to promote the DLC Book Club, which we just started, Lana Bashinsky and myself. I love books. I love reading. And it's been way too long since I've done a lot of it. You know, I had kids and I just didn't read for a while. And I'm so glad to be back. I love reading, and I love reading fantasy. So Lana and I are teaming up and doing a book club. We're calling the DLC Book Club. And we're inviting folks to read along with us. The books we're reading are the Malazan Books of the Fallen. These are the books by Steven Erikson. The first book is called Gardens of the Moon. And we put out the first episode talking about the first half of that book, which I think we've realized is a little bit too big of a chunk. So subsequent episodes are going to have smaller chunks of the book to talk about. But I think we've gotten really great feedback on the first episode. We do a whole section at the beginning that is not spoilery. We talk a lot about just our reading and our history with reading. Even folks that aren't reading the book with us have enjoyed the first half of the episode. It's available on my YouTube page, which is youtube.com/Kanata Jeff, I think, because Jeff Kanata was my old Justin TV name that I never claimed. And so is dead to use for anybody. Anyway, no need to go into that. But check it out. We also put out an audio version, a podcast version exclusive for patrons. People have been really digging it. In fact, Steven Erikson himself commented on the thing. I was very proud of that. He gave his show of support, the author of the book that we're talking about. So check it out. It's the DLC Book Club. You can find it on my YouTube page. We also got a listener-suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes from Andrew, who says, I wanted to send in another music parting gift that I think will be 100% up Christian's Avenue. The band Meet Me at the Altar is a new act signed to the same label that produced great pop-punk acts like Fall Out Boy, Paramore, etc. And let me tell you, Meet Me at the Altar's new album, Past, Present, Future, is a pop-punk fever dream ripped straight out of 2008, made by a new generation. Not only is their music the perfect soundtrack to spring and summer, but the band has amazing representation, rarely seen in the emo pop-punk space, with all three members being people of color. I'd really recommend everyone giving their album a listen, including their single, Say It to My Face, which may sound familiar because it was in a Taco Bell ad. Now, if you like it, they just announced a new tour and tickets are on sale now. Love the show, Andrew. Thank you, Andrew. Christian, are you familiar with Meet Me at the Altar?
Love them. I think they've been a parting gift before for some of their EPs. They are great. The kids and I were listening to them today as we were tooling around town a little bit. They are fantastic. And their origin story is also fantastic, where they kind of met over the internet. It's a three folk band, and two were knowing each other and creating some pop punky demos. Like, we should do this. And they kind of put out a internet casting call for a singer. And there's a whole story for how they found their singer. But they are awesome, and their new full length is great. It's very good.
There you go. If you'd like to have your parting gift read on the show, send it to us. dlcfeedback@gmail.com is where you send those. We love getting all kinds of cool recommendations from the audience. All right. That's it for this episode of DLC. Thank you for listening. Thanks again to Steven Spahn and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those awesome bumpers. Thanks to our theme song composers, White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. You can get DLC swag, including t-shirts and mugs and all kinds of cool stuff with our awesome logo at dlcswag.com. Thank you for making that website, Jason J. Anderson. And a particular thank you goes to our patrons who make the show possible. Without them, we would not be able to do it. So thanks, patrons, for supporting the show at patreon.com/dlcpod. Our top tier patrons are called our Hype Train patrons, and they get their names shouted out at the end of every episode, which I'm going to do right now.
Yeah, girl. It's time to thank the Hype Train patrons. Jason Novak and Taylor Wiggard, Octavian Retsiu and Jed, Josh Peak and Peter Olberg, it's Nick Strauss-Klein, Michael Buck, Jackson and Michael Stadler, Travis and Mike Lombardo, it's Soren Silk and Yick and the Spirit. Spiceman Silencer, and Albert of the Stuff and Junk Show podcast. Mm-hmm. You know it's true. Jonathan Spiceman Forever Schlepfer. That's what I'm talking about. And Zachary White. Oh, and Stu Goss and Nate Coho, Kevin Brazel and Jenny and Ben, Scott Hughes and Dan Palmino, Malcolm King and Mark Gowan, it's Jimmy Radcliffe and Jonathan Putney, it's Mitchell Ness and Jeff Luxack, it's Will with one L Harris and Chris Zacharias to Matt Bradley and Jonathan Talbert and Victor Valenzuela. Victor Valenzuela. Oh yeah. Scooby Diesel and Cheesy Bob. It's Adam Denby and Hank Patton. Song and Kylie Star. It's Riley Knox, Nandy Joyce, Matt Valdez and Michael S. It's Relentless Rex and Curtis from Louisville. It's comedian Aaron Trahan. It's David F. And that's not all. No, no, no. Sure you can. Oh-hoo! It's Hyperboy 66. It's Scott Lambert and Brian Yoldan. It's Joe D. Frank. It's Kevin Eddy. It's Stephen T. Seifert. It's Rob Wonder, Rob Dominguez, and Tyler Buck, Wild Road. It's Dwayne T. Robinson. Ah. That's our Hype Train patrons. Thank you. Thank you, all of you, for making this night extra funky.
All right. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.